Welcome to the Deep Dive.
Great to be here.
So today we're taking a deep dive into this stack of source material we have. It basically lists and describes homeless shelters and transitional housing facilities right across Canada.
That's right. And think of this as, you know, getting a clear overview of what's available out there in terms of emergency and transitional housing support. But, and this is key, based only on the details that are actually in these specific sources.
Exactly. So our mission, really, is just to unpack this data. We want to highlight the key insights, the details about where these places are, who they're serving, what kind of support they offer, strictly based on what's written down here.
It's like getting a snapshot, a map, of the system as documented in this material.
Right. So diving in, one of the first things that kind of jumps out from the sources is the main split, right, between emergency shelters and transitional housing.
Yeah, absolutely. The descriptions provided make that distinction pretty clear. Emergency shelters, they're framed as, you know, the immediate short-term crisis response.
Like, you need a place tonight.
Pretty much. Whereas transitional housing, based on these descriptions, it seems to be more about longer-term support, often linked to specific programs.
Yeah.
Programs designed to help people, individuals, or families sort of move towards more stable, permanent housing. It's not just a roof. It's support for what comes next.
And the scale, wow. Looking at the numbers listed in the sources, it varies wildly. Some of these places are huge.
Oh, definitely. The Calgary Drop-In and Rehab Center Society in Calgary, AB, the source lists it with 128 beds. That's massive.
Really gives you a sense of the need in some areas. And there are others listed with hundreds too, right?
Mm-hmm. Peel Family Shelter in Mississauga, ON, that's listed at 484 beds. Mission Bonnecole in Montreal, 408 beds.
Calgary Foothill Shelter, the Mustard Seed, 370 beds. Herb Jameson Center in Edmonton, 325. YMCA in Ottawa, their family housing program, 333 beds. These are major operations according to this data.
They are. But what's really striking, I think, is the contrast the sources show. Because alongside these really big facilities, the list includes places that are, well, much, much smaller.
Incredibly small, yeah. I mean, the sources list some facilities with literally one bed.
Exactly. Like Peter Street Transitional Apartments in St. John, New Brunswick, one bed. Centre Lafayre in La Baie, Quebec, same thing, one bed listed.
And those Connect Youth housing programs in Ontario, North Grenville, Prescott, Spencerville, the source lists one bed each for those locations too.
Right, and then you've got everything else in between, like Joyce Cope House, Elizabeth Fry Society in Barrie, Ontario, 25 beds, or the Salvation Army Senior Shelter in Toronto. That one lists 37 or 46 beds, depending on the specific program mentioned.
So this huge range in size just laid out in the source material, it suggests, well, a really diverse set of approaches, doesn't it? From huge crisis centers to these tiny, maybe more specialized spots.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk geography. Where are all these places, according to the sources?
Well, they're certainly not just in one spot. This material shows a really widespread.
Oh, for sure. Coast to coast to coast, really. You've got listings from Newfoundland and Labrador, the Maritimes, right across Quebec, Ontario.
Through Manitoba, Saskatchewan, Alberta, out to BC.
And even up into the Yukon and the Northwest Territories. The picture these sources paint is definitely national.
And yeah, okay, the big cities show up a lot. Montreal, Toronto, Calgary, Edmonton, Vancouver. Do you see those names frequently in the list?
But, and this seems important based on the data, it's not only big cities. The sources list facilities in tons of smaller cities, towns, even places marked as non-designated, across almost every province and territory listed.
Good point. Like Clarenville in Newfoundland or Alma in Quebec.
Cobourg, Ontario, Flin Flon, Manitoba, Yorkton, Saskatchewan. Banff, Alberta, Ladysmith, BC, the list goes on and on.
So it underlines that the need and the services listed in response aren't confined to just the major urban centers. Oh. This source material shows a much broader network.
Exactly. Okay, so we have a sense of where, the scale, the type. What about who? Who are these facilities actually serving, according to the sources?
Right. The sources have columns like target clientele and gender served, which give us some clues.
Yeah, you see general clientele listed quite a bit, but also clear focuses on youth and families.
And the gender categories are pretty specific, too. All genders, sure, but also men, women, and even teen girls women or teen boys men.
That kind of targeting mentioned right in the data suggests services are trying to adapt to different group-specific needs, you know?
Makes sense. Can you give some examples from the list, like for youth?
Sure. The sources list, Phoenix Youth Shelter in Halifax, that's noted as all genders. Natchitoches Safe House in Newfoundland, specifically teen girls, women, choices for youth in St. John's, also for teens, boys, men, lots of youth-specific places listed.
And for families?
You see places like Peel Family Shelter in Mississauga, again, listed for family all genders. Brenda's House in Calgary, also family all genders. Then there's Armée de Salut Abri d'Espoir in Montreal, which the source specifies is for family women.
Okay, and then just general men-only or women-only places beyond family or youth.
Yeah, tons of those listed. Journey House in Gander, NL, listed for men. La Maison du Père in Montreal, also men. Grace House for Women in Fredericton. Maison Marguerite de Montreal, women. Salvation Army shelters often have separate men's and women's programs listed, like in Regina or Saskatoon or Calgary. Powell Place in Vancouver, women. Catholic Charities Men's Shelter, Vancouver. It's common in the data.
And the sources also mentioned some interesting intersections, like youth, who are also parents.
Right. That transitional supported independent living for parenting and pregnant youth in Edmonton is listed. It shows a layer of specificity.
One other thing I noticed in the source material, the mention of Native or Indigenous specific housing.
Yes, that's explicitly noted in several locations. Places like Natchitoches and Shashotsu in NL, Osweakin in Ontario, several spots in the prairie provinces like Brandon, Saskatoon, Calgary, Edmonton, and out in BC, Nanaimo, Prince George, Vancouver, and even Gawson City in the Yukon.
So the sources document these specific services, pointing to culturally relevant support within Indigenous communities.
Exactly. It's an important element captured in this data set.
Okay, so this focus on who is served, it links back to what we talked about earlier, the nature of the stay. Emergency versus transitional.
Right. Emergency is that immediate crisis stopgap. But the transitional housing descriptions in the source material, they give us a bit more flavor about the purpose, maybe the duration.
Yeah. Some of the names or descriptions listed are quite specific, like Association d'Entraide Le Chenon in Montreal. The source lists Unité de Transition and Maisons de Marie, 5 months. They actually put potential timeframes right there.
Exactly. Or you see terms in the source like logement social de transition or logement de transition, sometimes linked to specific programs like that mental health one at Missional Brewery, programme de réaffiliation, or just logement supervisé.
And further west, the sources mention things like supported independent living or semi-independent living in Edmonton. That sounds like steps towards living on your own.
It does. It suggests a pathway. And you see terms like rapid rehousing listed for places in BC or second stage housing popping up in the data for Ontario, Saskatchewan, Alberta, BC.
So second stage implies moving on from the initial emergency shelter phase.
That's often the idea, yeah. Maybe with continued support to find and keep permanent housing. The sources also list program types like low barrier shelter.
Which usually means fewer rules for entry, right?
Yeah.
Easier access.
Generally, yes. Or you see safe beds, which might be for very specific crisis situations, sometimes related to mental health or substance use. These different labels, pulled straight from the source documents, really paint a picture of all the different ways help is offered.
And running all these diverse places,
yeah.
The sources list a huge variety of organizations under the umbrella organization column.
It's quite a mix. You've got the big national and international names you'd expect, like the Salvation Army, YMCA, YWCA, Canadian Mental Health Association, John Howard Society. They're definitely present in the data.
But what really jumps out from this material is just the sheer number of other groups, smaller local organizations, maybe focused on specific populations.
Totally. It's not just a handful of big players, according to this list. It's like this whole ecosystem. You see groups listed like Choices for Youth in Newfoundland, Blooming House and PEI, Rezo Maison Oxygen in Quebec, Blue Door in Ontario.
The Brantford Native Housing, the Working Center in Kitchener, Main Street Project, and Siloam Mission in Winnipeg.
Central Urban Metis Federation, Inc., in Saskatoon, Calgary Alpha House, In From the Cold in Calgary, Enviro's Wilderness School Association, Native Counseling Services of Alberta,
Cyrus Center Ministries in BC, Lookout Housing and Health Society, Atira Women's Resource Society, Tillicum Lelum, Aboriginal Friendship Center in Nanaimo.
Mm.
The list in the source material is incredibly long and diverse.
Hundreds of them. So that tells you, based on this data anyway, that the response involves a really wide range of community-based efforts.
Right. So let's try and connect this all back for you, the listener. What this source material seems to lay out is, well, a detailed picture of the support infrastructure across Canada.
You've got that immediate emergency help for when things hit crisis point.
And then there's this wide spectrum of transitional support. Different lengths of stay, different levels of supervision, all aimed, it seems, at helping people move towards stability.
And the sources make it pretty clear that these services are often really tailored.
Yeah, tailored by location, obviously, but also targeting specific groups, youth, families, men, women, indigenous peoples.
Or focusing on specific program types, like, you know, low barrier access or supportive living models.
But this data, the actual material we looked at, give you a concrete sense of the complex network that's in place, documented across the country, to support people facing homelessness or housing instability.
It really is a complex web of services described here, which I suppose reflects the complex nature of housing insecurity itself.
Okay, that pretty much wraps up our deep dive into this specific list of Canadian shelters and transitional housing facilities.
We've touched on the types, the scale, where they are, who they serve according to the sources, the different kinds of support, and the huge variety of organizations involved, all based strictly on the data provided.
So, thinking about everything we've unpacked from this source material, what does this sheer variety and specificity tell you? You know, everything from a single crisis bed in one town to a 1,000-bed shelter in a big city, from youth-focused apartments to seniors' housing. What does that range documented right here suggest about the actual nature of housing insecurity challenges across Canada?
It certainly seems to highlight the complexity, doesn't it? That there isn't just one type of need and maybe not one single approach that works for everyone, definitely something to think about.